There's a moment in the 1994 Super Nintendo game, Earthbound, that when I saw it, recontextualized and reframed my love and understanding of what the game was. In this particular scene, the player is taking control of a bespectacled boy named Jeff. Jeff is living in a boarding house in a snowy town in the north. He awakens in the middle of the night in a cold sweat, compelled by outside forces to run away from the boarding house that's become his home. As he gathers his belongings in his room, he awakens his sleeping best friend, Tony. Tony advises that to be caught sneaking around the school is bad news, and offers to join Jeff. Now the player, as both Jeff and Tony, explore the school, collecting items that will be useful in their escape. The two make their way outside into the snowy night, where they come face to face with their biggest obstacle, the wrought iron gate of the school grounds. It's too high for the both of them to get over. Without hesitating, Tony crouches against the gate and implores Jeff to use him as a step. And with no choice, we, the player, has to acquiesce. As Jeff lands in the snow and into freedom, Tony calls out from behind the iron bars. "Well, I'll say goodbye for now. I don't know where you're going or why, but remember, we're best friends forever." And with that, Tony's role in the story effectively ends, and we leave him and boarding house behind us as we head out onto a bigger adventure. Earthbound is a game that starts as a simple adventure, a boy and his friends swept up in a heroic journey. But the game morphed at that moment for me. Earthbound is a tale of growing up, of experiencing the adult world, and its complications through the eyes of your childhood self. It's an enduring work, a classic, and Ken's favorite game. So I sat him down in the studio and thought I'd ask him, why? Hey guys, welcome to a very special episode of the Local Co-op Podcast. I'm Colin, and I'm here with Ken. Ken, what's up, bud?
How's it going?
It's going good. It's going good. Today, we're going to do something a little special. We can see we're down our strongest heavy hitter party member, Zach, who's currently on tech duties for us. Basically, what we're going to do today is each of us, whoever's listening, who's ever recording right now, we all have our favorite things, the things in video games that we love, and the moments and the games that have affected us in more dramatic ways than others have in the past. And there's always a list that sticks out in your head of the games that define you as a gamer, as someone who enjoys story, who gets swept up in a real adventure. And this is kind of what the basis of, I think the root of our podcast came from a conversation that I had with Ken, in which I asked him, kind of pseudo-interviewed him very off the cuff, just about his favorite title, his favorite game, and that game is Earthbound. So I figured we've got some whiskey here for us, got some highball glasses, and we're just going to figure out and talk to Ken kind of what it is about Earthbound that really sticks out for him. Ken, what's Earthbound?
So Earthbound, by its basic definition, is a Japanese RPG from Nintendo. Made in 1994, released in 1994 in Japan, released in North America in 1995. Most people know it as that quirky, strange RPG that mm-hmm. came out on the Super Nintendo, very colorful, very vibrant, very strange. It's the second in a series of three. In Japan, it's known as Mother. Earthbound is known as Mother 2, and then there was Mother 3 that followed suit that was actually never released in America. It's hard to describe.
How about this, Ken? How does Earthbound begin?
So it begins seemingly as many kind of grand adventures, especially Japanese RPGs, begin. You play as a young boy, a young man, you're never really given an age, of Ness, And Ness lives in his hometown of Wonnette. And one night a meteor crashes, causes a lot of hullabaloo. Ness goes to check it out. Ness finds out that there is a great evil coming for the Earth. He learns this from a fly named Buzz Buzz.
Stick with us, people.
Yep. A fly named Buzz Buzz, who is actually a warrior of some sorts, like a messenger, like from the future, like sent back, and he's taken the form of a fly to tell you this. And he gives Ness a sound stone and tells Ness that he must go to the 8 sanctuaries around the world and harness the power of these sanctuaries to take down this evil. This sounds a lot like your standard adventure title. But it's in the way Earthbound presents itself that is not standard at all.
This is 100% true. This is a world that's extremely bright and colorful. The way that the game is splayed out in front of you, the way the map works, everything in this is so... It just stands out in such a way visually that it's undeniably part of its appeal is how aesthetically pleasing it is to look at. Not in the sense of look at how high-end graphics this is. It's so beautiful. It really looks like a town. It looks like a monster alien that you're fighting. It's just it's got an utmost supply of charm.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. I mean, especially, so it came out of the Super Nintendo, so you'd be remiss not to mention, you know, a lot of people consider that the kind of the golden age of the Japanese RPG. You have Chrono Trigger, you have Final Fantasy VI, you have like games like Secret of Evermore, Secret of Mana. Lots of Japanese RPGs are coming around. Many of them fantasy-based. This... I guess you could say it's loosely based in the real world. it definitely is supposed to take...
A little sci-fi.
Yep, definitely. Definitely a sci-fi tone throughout the game. Mm-hmm. But, you know, it takes place in places that are supposed to be like our real world. Small towns, big towns.
Like a character, if you need to get health or, you know, bring a fallen party member back to life, you have to go to the hospital to do so.
Yep. Your health recovery is food items that you find, you can buy. There's lots of different ones. Your weapons, Ness's main weapons are baseball bats and yo-yos. Mm-hmm. Some of the other weapons, some of the other characters are frying pans. You have the...
cap guns.
Yep. Pop guns. And,
pop guns.
And then one character, hand-to-hand. Mm-hmm. As a kid, a lot of the allure was, you know, the bright colors and the interesting music and the cartoony, goofy enemies. You start in Wonnette, and one of your first tasks is dealing with the gang, the Shark Gang. And they're literally a bunch of punk kids on pogo sticks and skateboards. and you have to infiltrate the arcade that they hang out at and do away with them and their boss. And it's, so it starts out, you know, very, you know, you almost wonder where's this going?
I was just going to say,
you know, you obviously from the start, you have this clear goal. I have to save the world. But before I save the world, I need to clear this gang out of my town. But I replayed the game as an adult. The game always stuck with me playing it as a kid. But I went back a couple years ago and replayed it as an adult, as I did with a few games, because I wanted a greater appreciation for it. Mm-hmm. I wanted to experience it again as older.
As someone, you mean you wanted to come back to it as someone with a bit more of a cognition about story structure and themes?
Yes, all of it. Everything that goes into getting older. You know, the experiences you have, the things that you just know, your knowledge, your experience with games. Does this game stand up? Like, you ask yourself that sometimes.
Much like as an adult or us now, we would watch an old movie from our childhood, and suddenly things that we didn't pick up on before, nuance or references, all change the experience and kind of recontextualize what the story itself was about. So you were doing the same thing with Earthbound.
Absolutely.
Okay.
So going through the game as an adult, I started to recognize just small hints about what this game to me was actually trying to say. Because, yeah, on paper, it just seems like this quirky, strange game where, you know, the happy happiests are just weird, cartoony people in purple gowns who are just there to be a nuisance. But then you get older, you realize, oh, this is something, I guess, deeper than that. After foiling the gang, the shark gang, you are brought into the police headquarters. And you get into a fight with the police. Five police officers, and the chief of police. They fight you. Now, as a kid, I never put two and two together. But at that time, was at the time of the development of the game, the Rodney King trials were going on. The infamous police brutality.
The riots.
Yep, the riots, everything that was involved in it. And you're playing as this young boy who had to fight the police. Now,
kind of counter to what all of their stories for a child would be.
Yeah, why? Like, as a kid, I'm just like, oh man, I gotta fight the police. Like, you know, they got a problem with me. And, but as an adult, I'm like, wait a minute. Like, what is this trying to say? I mean, you had the real world implications, like I said, the Rodney King case. But then you also had this, it started to really, and this is when I really started to rethink the game going through it. I'm playing as this young man, this young boy who is, he's leaving his hometown to go on an adventure to save the world. The police are fighting against him. Adults are going against him.
And other children are going against him.
Other children are going against him. And it started to make me think more and more about what is this game really trying to tell me? What is this game trying to tell me about the world? And it's kind of one of those things where I don't know really where to begin with, like, the thoughts that I had my second playthrough through the game.
Stephen King wrote in a popular series of novels, Dark Tower, and in introductions on his book on writing that was called On Writing, that it is hard to begin, whether it's starting a new story or beginning a thought process. And I had a little bit of a different experience with Earthbound because I didn't play it until I was an adult. And, I mean, I wanted to play it because the main character, Ness, is represented in Super Smash Bros., like a Mario fighting game they're all fans of. So when I played it, and, you know, you can rename the character, so of course I did. I was Ness, you know. Zach, our other co-host, was Pooh, the martial artist. And the game itself shows, it puts innocence represented as you know, Ness and his friends in situations that they shouldn't be in adult situations. I'm not saying drugs or like here's kids, you know, with vicious fights and like, you know, it instead puts a child's eye and a child's innocence in a situation that they haven't grown up to know yet. And I think one of the things that really stands out to me in the game itself is the role that your family plays in the game. So your home base is obviously your childhood home. And everyone has a connection to their childhood home. Everyone has a house in their head or you know, God forbid, you know, their home, whatever it was. They have flashback to that as their childhood. Everyone has like a connection to that spot. So throughout the course of the game, you can be exploring as Ness and you can suddenly be stricken with homesickness. You know, suddenly like a message pops up that says, you know, what would it say? Like Ness has suddenly got a craving for his favorite food that his mom used to cook. And suddenly the performance of the character Ness is harder to wield. He needs to go back home, visit his family, recharge those batteries. And it's weird moments like that because those kinds of things aren't in games. Because it's not like go back home, it's part of the quest. It's go back home, it's part of life in such a strange way. Do you think you could comment on those kind of representations?
Definitely the family. See, like you said, you have to call home. You have to call your mom specifically every now and then because your mom is at home. The father is not. You never see the father in the game. Mm. To save the game, you have to call your dad. Your dad also supplies you with money, but you never see him. Mm-hmm. He sometimes reminds you to call your mom. He gives like little words of encouragement. But he's never present. And it's one of those things like you think about when you play through it, you know, and you're cognizant of that. Why isn't dad around? Why isn't dad isn't even at home in the beginning of the game. He's never in the home. You always have to reach out to him through phone calls.
And he calls out to you often when you're out exploring and you're with your friends and you're on this adventure. And he'll, when you speak to him, he'll tell you, hey, what is the phrase, you know?
Every now and then the game can tell, and I forget the exact phrase, but every now and then the game can tell when you've been playing for a long time, like without saving.
I think it's like an hour or two.
And your dad will contact you and tell you, you know, hey, get to a phone. Don't tire yourself out.
Yeah. It's important to take a break every once in a while.
Yep.
Don't tire yourself out.
And it's one of those things, like the first time you see, like, what is happening?
Yeah.
And then, you know, it happens. And the thing is, in a lot of normal playthroughs, that might not ever occur. Like, that might not ever happen to you. It could be something that you never even see happen. Mm-hmm. I played it on an emulator once. And so you come across it a lot, because if you ever played a game on an emulator, you don't really save. Mm-hmm. You save your state. You know, that's just how you do it. So the game, you run into that often. So when I was playing it on the emulator once, I ran into that often, and it really made me think about, like, why does this happen? Is it just some pseudo weird thing that, like, Nintendo is trying to do to, you know, hey, people, don't play video games, go outside? Or is it just another implementation of the father figure trying to be a father figure?
But then again, I mean, he can tell you, hey, take a break, you know, don't push yourself too hard. You're a kid, you know. The real world that out there that you're out adventuring in is hard, so don't feel like you have to take it all on. But you can choose to continue to keep playing.
Yeah.
To explore the game world.
You can go against him. I also like the fact that you talked about the idea of taking the world on your own. That is, to me, a huge theme of Earthbound. And this is something that resonated with me a lot. And this is, Earthbound is not the greatest game ever made. It's not. There are JRPGs that are better games. But it's the reason I like this game so much is because it resonated with me. And a lot of that has to do with my, you know, my experiences.
Your own personal life.
Yeah. And not to push too far forward into the game, but as you progress through the game, you start to notice the great many people who you come across, not just your party members, but the non-playable characters, sometimes enemies, turn into allies that help you, that want to help you. This is fully told in the end of the game. And once again, I don't want to jump too far ahead, but there was a point in my life where I realized the importance of having supportive people in your life. Not to get too far down the rabbit hole, but there's been some really bad times that if I didn't have the people in my life, things would be completely different. So I'm playing through this game as an adult, and I'm seeing these things happen. I'm seeing the allies play such an important role. And in the end of the game, they play a key role. So, spoilers. To beat the final boss, you don't hit it until it dies. You pray. You pray and pray and pray until someone hears your prayer. One of the other party members, Paula, she has the ability to pray. And for a lot of the game, you might not use it. It has a chance to, you know, heal your party, but for most of the game, you probably won't use it. You might wonder for a while why it's even there. And then you get to the end of the game, and you reach a point in the final boss fight with Gygas where you have to pray. And at first, you might think, oh, this is doing nothing. But then you keep praying. You keep using the ability to pray. And then soon, the people that you've come across in your adventure, they hear your prayer. And they don't really know what's going on. Some of them haven't seen Ness and Paula and Jeff and Pooh in quite some time in the course of the story. But they know that they need to support Ness at this moment. And they do. And it's in this moment where I was like, this is...
Have a sip of whiskey here.
What Earthbound is trying to say is bigger than just kind of the package that you see. Like the importance of the people around you, the importance of the people that you've come across in your life, the way they shape you. Ness and his group don't reach the end of the story without the help of the people who are hearing their prayers. Those people may not even know what Ness is fighting. And this great evil is described as an evil that has always existed, but, you know, rears its head every so often, which once again, kind of classic JRPG stuff, an ancient evil has awakened. But because of the setting of this game, because it's you know, cartoonish, but, you know, the real world, it's supposed to kind of almost like satire the real world. It's almost as if Ness and his group, Paula, Jeff, Pooh, they're trying to fight against an evil that has always been there. An evil that kind of works against all of us. The trials, the tribulations of life, the things that just always seem to push back.
The sum total of all your hardship.
The things that are out of our control. Powerful people, powerful organizations that seem to shape our life and make decisions for us. Sometimes it makes us feel powerless, gets us frustrated. And that's when I started to think of Gygas as like, this isn't just some typical ancient evil. This is more of a metaphor.
An abstract and an idea.
Yes. Representing everything that works against us. Everything that kind of almost makes us want to squash that hope that we have.
I think when we come and when we play video games, sometimes we play them just because we hear things are fun, or you know, we have an interest, or you know, oh, there's a history here, I want to go back and play something classic. There are some games that undoubtedly resonate with us for ways that we didn't expect they were going to. And when you have a game like that, when you see Ness fighting, like you said, an abstract evil that, I mean, you're playing as Ness. That's your player avatar. So that's you. So when you put yourself in the game and you, alongside your friends, call upon the sum total of your experiences in order to overcome, I don't want to say the monster, but your, the wall in your way, your difficulty, your hardship, whether it's an actual physical threat or a mental threat, an emotional state, it's overcoming that, and in the way that Earthbound allows you to do so, kind of shows, it puts forth an idea in a game in which you are having more than just a video game experience. For a child, it's just, oh, it's a fun game, it's cool, I beat the boss, sweet.
That boss was scary.
Yeah, terrifying. And it's a scary image, Gygas, the final fight.
The ambiance of the final fight, the music, and people can't see me, but I'm putting it in quotation marks, the music is terrifying.
Mm-hmm.
It's not music, it's noise.
Yeah. There's, when people come to a game like that, that you can revisit as an adult and everything has more of a meaning than it did, is there's something beautiful about that in revisiting things from your youth. Because since the game itself is about childhood and maturation, the game plays differently for a child than it does as an adult. Because for a child who's playing it, you could say, this is what your life experience is going to be like without knowing that. And as an adult, you play it and you realize, this was me, and these memories of, you know, throughout the course of the game, every time you and your party members defeat a great evil or a boss or experience something together, you get your picture taken. Mm-hmm. At the end of the game, when you get to go through all those pictures and you see, you have the memories of, suddenly when you play it as an adult, you have these memories of your childhood friends and the things that you went through together. Anything that can bring a flashback of memories like that, I think is something to be celebrated.
I'm just soaking in what you just said. But no, I agree. The pictures, the sanctuaries, the moments at the sanctuaries, as I said at the beginning, Buzz Buzz gives you a sound stone and tells you to defeat this great evil, you need to harness the power of the sanctuaries around the world. You must visit these places and, you know, kind of absorb their power into the sound stone. And so whenever you reach one of these sanctuaries, there's moments of like serene, like quiet, there's like a light music. And even in those moments, it made me think of, you know, the cliches, like, you know, stop and smell the roses and enjoy the happy moments.
Mm-hmm.
Which is not something that I've done often enough, admittedly, but it made me think of those. It made me think, you know, I should stop and enjoy those moments, because it's the hardships that make those moments that much greater. You know, usually before a boss, there was a lot of fights. Maybe character passed out. Maybe Ness almost passed out, but you beat the boss, and now you have this moment. I talked about moments like fighting the police officers. there's lots of moments like that that kind of hearken to real world events. I also made reference to the Happy Happiests, the cult that appears in the game, that as a kid, you probably don't even know what a cult is, but as an adult, I recognized it fully as a cult. And if you, you know, lived through the mid to late 90s, cults were a thing. And those are another moment where I started to think about, like, wow, what is this game trying to tell me?
Yeah.
Later on, you even come across a very rich businessman who owns a very expensive department store. And he has come under the influence of a statue. And it is the statue has turned him evil. And you defeat him and you defeat the statue and you break the power and he's back to being normal. And he even goes so far as to help you out. But during that time, you can't help but realize you're fighting this adult who his money brings him power, brings him influence. And it's these moments that hearken to the real world that really make you think life is kind of, I called Earthbound kind of a satire before. Its colorful depiction of the real world, its cartoonish depiction of the real world, is almost, to me, a way of saying some of this world, our real world, is absurd. It is cartoonish. It's almost laughably funny, the things that people in our real world do, and the things that people in our real world get away with. But, like Ness and his party, you have to persevere through those things, and you have to continue to try to do what's right. Stay on your path. And it's that kind of stuff that when I think about Earthbound now, I think about it as, and people are definitely, you know, going to think, this guy's making a lot out of a game that came out in 1995 that looks like this on the Super Nintendo. But some of that could be true. I could be doing the old English major thing where, you know, the curtains are blue because, well, the character is sad. Well, the curtains are blue because the author wanted them to be blue, and blue is his favorite color. I could be doing that, but I don't think so. After, you know, I've played through the game 4 times now, twice as an adult, and I can't help but shake that there was more than just your average message in this game.
So I think it's safe to say that you would recommend Earthbound be played.
If you're a fan of the genre, absolutely. I think it's worth your time. Mm-hmm. Like I said before, it is not the pinnacle of Japanese RPGs. Its combat is pretty simple. There's a little nuance to it, but relatively simple. It's fairly linear, but if you want to experience something different, if you want to experience something that is just going to kind of turn your opinion of the Japanese RPG and possibly video games as a whole on its head, seek out and try to play Earthbound. It's a different kind of game. It was a different kind of game even when it came out. And you know what? It still is a different kind of game. I see pieces of it in other games. But it's always going to be a game that sticks close to me because of what it meant to me as a kid and what it means to me now. It's just that kind of situation.
Well, with local co-op, I think you can come to expect more of these game spotlights with the three of us, and maybe even some additional voices be heard. That was Ken's favorite title, Earthbound. If you are interested in more of our stuff, check us out on elcopodcast.com and follow us on Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, the whole works there. Ken, thank you for selling Earthbound to me. I'm going to go play it again.
Thank you.
All right, everybody. Take care. I'll catch you next time.